One of the things that kept Smoke alive this long was his ability not to get thrown for a loop by unexpected developments. Finding Sally on top of Emmeline Bolton walloping the bejabbers out of her was certainly unexpected. That didn't even take into account the other things he found at Triangle B headquarters. A bloody but apparently unbowed Cal Woods standing nearby with Susanna Bolton, the lifeless body of Tom Gruber, and the sprawled form of an old man Smoke didn't know. It was easy to see that Gruber was dead, shot up like he was. Smoke didn't know about the old-timer. He might just be unconscious. Emmeline appeared to be unconscious as well. Her features were bloody and already swelling. If Sally had kept hitting her, she might have killed the woman. Smoke figured Sally didn't really want that.
It's all right. It's over. She's done.
While Smoke was calming Sally, he looked over at Cal, who approached him slowly, shuffling like an old man, because he appeared to have been knocked around quite a bit. Susanna ran to her mother and dropped to her knees beside Emmeline. She put her arms around Emmeline's shoulders and helped her sit up. Emmeline wasn't out cold. She moved her head slowly from side to side. Her blonde hair hung in front of her face in disarray. She appeared to be stunned, as if she had no idea what was going on.
Cal, are you all right?
Reckon I will be. A bullet dug a ditch along my side, and I lost some blood.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, it's not very comfortable, but I think I'll live. I'm hoping I'll feel a mite better once it's patched up.
I'm sure you will. Where have you been?
Oh, that's what I need to tell you. Those rustlers captured me, but I got away from them after a while. I know where their hideout is, Smoke. There's a little canyon way back up in the hills, 10 or 15 miles west of here. Everything around it is as barren as it can be, so it would never occur to you that anything might be hidden in there.
The Devil's Garden.
You know the place?
I've been up there a few times hunting. Mountain goats come down to the little stream now and then. I don't think any of that area has ever been claimed by the ranchers around here. There's some good grass, but it's too far away and too much trouble getting there for anybody to run stock on it on a regular basis. But I can see how it would work for a bunch of rustlers to hold a stolen herd as they built it up.
I think there's a trail lead west through the mountains toward the gold camps.
That's right. Again, it's too rugged for anybody to use it regular-like. But if you just want to get rid of a herd of stolen stock, it would be worthwhile. That's where you were when you got away from them.
Yeah, night before last. They tried to track me down and stayed on my trail until last night, but I finally gave them the slip with Susanna's help.
If they lost your trail last night, they'll be getting ready to move those cows today. If they're not on the trail already, I'll round up some of the boys and head up there hell-bent for leather to see if we can stop them. I ought to be able to find Bolton's foreman, Matt Coolidge.
No, not Coolidge. He's one of the gang. For all I know, all the Triangle B hands are.
I knew it. Thaddeus Bolton's behind the whole thing.
Sally had gotten control of herself again. She stepped back and looked up at Smoke.
I've never known anyone as almost infallible as you are, Smoke. But even you make a mistake now and then. Thaddeus Bolton isn't the ringleader of the rustlers.
He's not? Well, then who is? Is Coolidge the actual boss?
Sally shook her head, half turned, and looked toward the spot where Emmeline still sat on the ground, with Susanna kneeling beside her and holding an arm around her shoulders. Emmeline appeared to have regained her senses after the beating Sally had given her. She glared at the others, her icy blue eyes filled with hate.
No. There's the boss, right there.
Are you sure?
There's no doubt about it, Smoke. We all heard Mrs. Bolton confess, although it wasn't so much confessing as it was bragging.
Sally nodded in confirmation of that statement. A few yards off to the side, the old cook rolled over as consciousness returned to him.
What about the old-timer?
Yeah, he's part of it too. When Santa and I finally got back here and figured we were safe, he wound up slipping us something that knocked us out. That's how Coolidge and Mrs. Bolton were able to take us prisoner.
She made her own daughter a prisoner?
I'm afraid so.
Is anybody else here?
Not that I know of.
Well, if we can't trust Emmeline or the old man, I can't leave you here with them.
I can take care of things, Smoke. I'm armed now, and I'll be all right.
Yeah, if you don't pass out. I'm sorry, Cal, but you look like you've been dragged behind a wild bronco for the last 10 miles. You need to get in the buggy with Sally, and the two of you head back to the Sugarloaf as fast as you can get there. Once you do, tell Pearly where the Rustler's hideout is. He can take care of things from there.
What are you going to do, Smoke?
I'll head on up into the hills.
You mean you'll take on the entire gang of killers by yourself? Not even you can do that, Smoke.
He's done things pretty close to that before.
I won't jump the whole bunch, but I can find them and keep an eye on them. So we'll have pretty good idea of what to do once Pearly gets there with reinforcements.
I'd ask you to promise not to take any unnecessary chances. But I know by now that it wouldn't do any good.
We need to do something about Mrs. Bolton, that old-timer.
I'll tie them up before I leave. We can collect them later.
What about Susanna?
We can take her with us to the Sugarloaf, if you think she'll go.
They turned toward Susanna and Emmeline, who got to their feet. Susanna still had her arm around her mother's shoulders. Emmeline looked like she would have enjoyed carving on Smoke, Sally, and Cal for a while with a dull knife.
Susanna, you need to come with me and Mrs. Jensen. Everything will be all right now.
No, it won't. How can you think like that, Cal? I can't even believe what's happened.
No, he's right, Susanna. For your own sake, you should abandon me. Everything is ruined for our family. These people will send me to prison. That is, if they aren't responsible for me being hanged.
No. No, I won't let that happen. Mr. Jensen, you know where to find the men you're after and those stolen cattle. Can't you just go after them? Do you have to?
Smoke, the old man.
Smoke looked around and saw the cook get to his feet and break into a shambling run. He didn't head for the barn or the corrals where he might have grabbed a horse and tried to make a getaway. He stumbled along the trail leading to the ranch house, as if he intended to keep running until he was far, far away from the scene of his crimes.
I guess I better go after him.
Before he could take a step, half a dozen horsemen moving at a steady lope swept around a bend in the trail about 100 yards away. Smoke recognized the black-clad, cadaverous figure of Deke Stratton in the lead. One of the regulator patrols was coming in. And as Smoke had been thinking for a while, if the center of the rustling operation actually was the Triangle B, the regulators might be part of it along with the regular ranch crew. He had believed that Thaddeus Bolton could be trying to divert attention from himself with the ruse of pretending to hunt for the owl hoots, even going so far as to hang those drifters while claiming they were part of the gang. Emmeline could have come up with the same ruse. Cottontop confirmed that a moment later. He ran toward the regulators, waving his gnarled hands over his head to get their attention.
Deke! Help! You gotta kill him! Kill them all!
Stratton's one of them. Get inside!
Smoke grabbed Sally's arm and urged her toward the steps. Cal turned toward Susanna, who was struggling with her mother. Emmeline had tried to break away as soon as Stratton and the other regulators rode into sight.
Mother, come on! We can't stay here!
Emmeline jerked loose from her daughter's grip and dashed toward the newcomers.
Deke! Deke, help!
Stratton sent his mount charging toward the house. He leaned forward in the saddle and drew his gun. Cottontop scurried to get out of the way as Stratton pounded ahead, heedless of the fact that the old-timer was in pain. The cook was too slow. He threw his arms up just before the surging horse struck him and knocked him off his feet. The other riders galloped after Stratton, pulling their irons as well. These hired guns might not know exactly what was going on, but they were always ready to kill without hesitation when the order came. Susanna ran after her mother, but Cal shoved the revolver in his waistband and lunged after her to grab her.
Bullets are fixing to fly out here. Come on!
Desperation must have given him strength. Even in such bad shape as he was, he swung a struggling Susanna off her feet and half-dragged, half-carried her toward the ranch house steps.
No! Let me go! Let me go!
She fought him, but Cal didn't listen to her. Flames spurted from the muzzles of the regulator's guns as they hurtled toward the house. Smoke palmed out his Colts and threw lead back at him as he hurried sideways after Sally, Cal, and Susanna. One of Stratton's men flung up his arms and pitched out of the saddle, drilled by a slug from Smoke's guns, but the others pounded on toward him, blazing away. Once again, an unintended target was in the path of that savage assault. Emmeline Bolton stumbled and fell as one of the bullets struck her in the chest. Susanna redoubled her efforts to get away from Cal. She might have succeeded if Sally hadn't grabbed her and jerked her into the house. Cal disappeared into the house after them, and Smoke was right behind him, Colt still booming in his hands. He only stopped shooting when he was inside and could kick the door closed behind him. Cal dropped to a knee at the window in the parlor and used the Remington's barrel to knock out the glass. He thrust the barrel through the opening he'd made and triggered the long-barreled revolver.
Got one of the varmints.
Smoke thumbed fresh rounds from the loops on his shell belt into one of the Colts. Sally stood there with her arms around Susanna, holding the girl against her.
Are you all right?
Yes. What about you?
So far, so good.
Not for my mother. Is she dead?
Cal?
She's moving around some. She's still alive. Can't tell how bad she's hit.
Where are Stratton and the others?
They rode into the barn. Reckon once we got some cover, they decided not to ride straight into our guns. We've already whittled them down some.
We're still outnumbered. But not by much. Unless more of the regulators are close by and heard that shooting. If they come to see what's going on, the odds against us could pile up in a hurry.
Smoke was reloading the second Colt now. When he finished, he went to the window and stood beside it with both guns in his hands.
Can you see them?
Nope. They haven't poked their noses out since they rode in there.
Oh!
Cal had to duck down as bullets chewed splinters from the windowsill and broke out what was left of the glass, spraying shards of it down over his hunched shoulders. Smoke hunkered next to the young cowboy. He held out one of the fully loaded Colts and a handful of cartridges.
I only hear two rifles. I've got a hunch the other two went out the back of the barn and are circling around to try and take us from behind. Here, that Remington's bound to run empty soon. Take this and use it to keep those two in the barn occupied.
You'll deal with the ones coming in the back?
That's the plan.
Good luck, Smoke. I don't reckon you'll need it, but...
A man always needs luck.
Smoke gave Cal another nod, then stood up and moved over to Sally, who had retreated past the stairs into the hallway with Susanna.
I want to go out there and see about my mother. You have to let me go. They won't shoot when they see it's me.
They had to be able to see it was your mother standing out there, and they didn't hesitate at all to start throwing lead around her. I'm sorry, Susanna. We'll check on her as soon as we can. But for now, you need to stay in here and keep your head down.
Emmeline wouldn't want you to get hurt, too, Susanna.
It doesn't matter. Those men are going to kill all of us.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
Smoke left him and hurried to the back of the house. He reached the kitchen and plucked back the curtain at the window in time to see two regulators dashing toward the house, rifles clutched in their hands, ready to fire. Smoke kicked the back door open and stepped out with a Colt thundering in his hand. Smoke's first two rounds punched into the chest of the man on his right and drove the hombre back off his feet as violently as if he'd run into a wall. The Winchester in the hands of the man to Smoke's left cracked twice. Smoke shifted his arm and fired before the man could get off a third shot. The Regulator's head jerked as the slug drilled into his forehead just above his left eyebrow, leaving a black, red-rimmed hole. It blew out the back of his skull in a grisly pink spray. He stumbled ahead two more steps before he pitched forward onto his face, dead. Hearing the gun he had left with Cal crashing in the front room, Smoke wheeled and plunged back through the house. He reached the parlor in time to see that the other two regulators had launched a frontal attack at the same time as the men behind the house. Crouched at the window, Cal suddenly went over backwards, sprawling on the floor.
Cal!
Sally and Susanna had retreated onto the steps now, stopping several steps up. They didn't dare to try to reach Cal with so much lead buzzing through the room like a swarm of maddened hornets. Smoke dived forward onto his belly, avoiding the worst of the bullet storm as the front door crashed open and a hired killer charged through it, firing a revolver as he came. Smoke tipped up the barrel of his Colt and squeezed off a shot. The bullet caught the man under the chin and ripped on up through his brain at an angle to burst out the top of his head and send his hat flying. The dead man fell back, blocking the door for a split second. The last of the regulators leaped over him and landed inside the foyer. He still had his rifle in his hands and trained it on Smoke, whose Colt boomed again just as the rifle cracked. The rifle bullet ripped a long gash in the floor beside Smoke's head. Splinters stung his cheek, but thankfully missed his eye, squinting through the clouds of acrid powder smoke that clogged the air in the house. Smoke kept his finger taut on the trigger in case another shot was necessary and watched as Deke Stratton dropped the rifle and reeled back against the wall just inside the door. Stratton pawed at his chest where Smoke's bullet had struck him. Crimson threaded between his splayed fingers as blood welled from the wound. He struggled to say something, but then slowly slid down the wall to end in a sitting position with his legs stretched out in front of him. His head sagged forward, and then gradually he toppled over on his side. Smoke leaped to his feet and went to the stairs. Sally came to the bottom of the steps and threw her arms around him.
You're still all right?
Fine. We stayed out of the line of fire as much as we could.
Susanna crowded past him and stopped in the foyer. Her head jerked back and forth as she looked at Cal and then outside, searching for her mother. Cal was struggling to sit up. After a moment of hesitation that must have seemed much longer to Susanna, she rushed into the parlor to kneel at Cal's side, heedless of the broken glass on the floor.
Be careful. You'll hurt yourself.
But you...
I'm all right. At least as good as I was before this ruckus started. One of those bullets hit the windowsill right in front of me and made me jerk back. Lost my balance, that's all. I wasn't hit again.
She flung her arms around his neck and clasped him tightly. He returned the embrace for a few seconds and then looked over his shoulder at Smoke and Sally.
Those other regulators?
All done for.
We better go see about your ma. It'll be safe now.
Susanna got hurriedly to her feet and ran out of the house. Smoke let go of Sally and reloaded his Colt. Then he gripped Cal's arm and helped him to his feet. The three of them then followed Susanna outside, stepping over bodies and avoiding pools of blood along the way. Once again, Susanna helped Emmeline sit up. A dark blood stain had spread darkly and ominously on the front of the old woman's dress, but she was still alive. As Smoke, Sally, and Cal approached, Susanna's mother reached up shakily to cup a bloody hand against her daughter's cheek.
Don't cry, dear. Who knows? Maybe it's better this way. Although I do wish the two of us could have gotten away from your father.
You're going to be all right, Mother.
No, I don't think so. I might have been if I'd left a long time ago.
Smoke and Cal looked around quickly. A large group of riders came around the same bend in the trail where the regulators had appeared earlier. This bunch was 3 or 4 times as large, though, more than 20 men, and they bore down on the small group of figures in front of the ranch house as if they intended to trample them into the dust. Thaddeus Bolton was in the lead, and as he came close enough to recognize his wife and daughter, shock and rage darkened his features. He kicked his mount into a hard gallop. Smoke stepped away from Sally, putting himself between Bolton and the others. He would stop the man if he had to. Cal moved up alongside him, haggard and obviously staving off collapse, but ready to summon up the determination for one more fight. Smoke recognized the men with Bolton as members of the Triangle B crew. Maybe they were part of the rustling scheme, but maybe they weren't. Smoke saw that the man right behind Bolton was Bart Hudson, the cowboy who had roughed up Cal and tried to whip him viciously when Cal first encountered Susanna. Bolton yanked his horse to an abrupt halt and swung down from the saddle. He wore a gun on his hip, but his hands were empty as he approached.
Get the hell out of my way, Jensen.
The man's wife was badly wounded, Smoke reminded himself. Bolton hadn't made any threatening moves and seemed to be at least partially in control of himself, so Smoke stepped aside. Bolton rushed past him to drop to his knees beside Emmeline and Susanna. Bart Hudson reined in too and motioned for the men behind him to do likewise. He had been appointed the ranch's segundo, Smoke recalled, second in command among the crew to Matt Coolidge, the foreman. Hudson glared at Smoke and Cal from the saddle.
What in the hell is going on here? Is that Cotton Top? If you've hurt that old man...
Dick Stratton is the one who rode him down. I'd advise you to take it up with him, but you can't. He's in the house, dead.
We know you're part of the gang, Hudson. Don't waste your breath denying it.
Gang? I don't know what the hell you're talking about, Woods.
Hudson's confusion looked genuine, Smoke realized. Since it had turned out that Emmeline had come up with the rustling scheme and recruited Coolidge to carry it out, it was possible he was the only member of the crew who'd betrayed Thaddeus Bolton.
Get away from me!
Emmeline's cry caused the men to turn and look toward her. She was still sitting on the ground with Susanna holding her. Bolton knelt beside him and had one hand lifted, as if he'd reached out to Emmeline, but she shrank back against Susanna.
Leave me alone. I hate you. I hate you. You ruined everything. I never should have. Never.
A spasm went through her as her eyes opened wide. Smoke had seen death claim too many people not to recognize it wrapping its bony fingers around Emmeline.
Mother!
Emmeline, no!
Bart Hudson dismounted and took a step forward as he clutched his horse's reins.
Who did this? Who hurt the boss's wife? You, Jensen, Woods?
Again, it was Stratton. He and some of his regulators charged in here shooting and Mrs. Bolton was in the way. Just like the old man was.
Why in hell would they do that?
Because they've been working with the rustlers all along. Matt Coolidge was the gang's ramrod, but Mrs. Bolton is the one who came up with the idea.
No, 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 that's loco. Matt would never have done such a thing.
He did, Bart.
Susanna was walking toward the group of men now. Behind her father had taken Emmeline's body in his arms and held her cradled against him. Now that she was dead, she couldn't pull away from him.
It's all true. I heard my mother admit it. Matt and Cotton Top were part of it, and so were Mr. Stratton and the men who rode with him. What about the rest of you? Are you rustlers too, outlaws?
Rustlers? Me and these other boys? No, Miss Susanna, no, I swear it. We've been searching everywhere for you, worrying out of our minds about what might have happened to you. We would never...
You were mighty quick to jump me that day. Maybe you had something to hide.
No. Ever since that happened, I've regretted it. I've always been too hot-headed at times. I wish I wasn't, but I can be a real jackass. If there was anything I could do to make up for it...
Maybe there is. Thanks to Cal, we know where to find that gang and all those stolen cattle. If you want to ride with me, we can go get them back.
You just show us where to go, Mr. Jensen. We'll get those cattle, and we'll hand those rustlers what they got coming to them. But you're sure Matt's one of them?
We're certain.
Then he'll get what's coming to him, too. That's the way life works, isn't it?
That's true. And sometimes, it's a mighty big shame.
Sally took responsibility for getting Cal and Susanna back to the Sugarloaf. Susanna didn't want to leave her mother, but Bolton insisted. Hudson picked a couple of men from the crew to remain behind and hitch up the ranch wagon. Bolton personally wrapped Emmeline's body in a fine bedspread from the house, and the men loaded her in the back of the wagon to take her into Big Rock to the undertaker. Bolton rode in the back of the wagon as well, his face like stone as he sat beside his wife's body. By the time they rolled out, Smoke and the rest of the Triangle B crew, led now by Bart Hudson, were mounted on fresh horses and riding hard toward the hills where the Rustler's stronghold was located. Cal had offered to come along, but Smoke had assured him it wasn't necessary. He knew how to find the place from Cal's description. Cal needed medical attention that had already been delayed for far too long. Also, when they reached the Sugarloaf, Cal could tell Pearlie where to find Smoke and the Triangle B riders. It wouldn't take long for Pearlie to gather the Sugarloaf crew and set out to provide reinforcements. Smoke set a fast pace. It was already past noon, and it would be mid-afternoon before he and his companions reached the narrow canyon where the Devil's Garden was located. Smoke glanced over at Bart Hudson, who was riding beside him.
I sure hope you're not double-crossing me, Hudson.
Not a bit, Mr. Jensen. I want to settle up with those varmints as much as you do. Joe Archibald was a friend of mine.
Are any of the men who are on duty with Archibald that night here in this bunch?
No, not a one. But I got a pretty good idea where they are. They must be with the rest of their wide-looping pards. The way I see it, they probably rode up to Joe and blasted him out of the saddle without him ever having any idea what was coming. You can't get much more low down than betraying a friend for money.
You know, Hudson, if you get that temper of yours under control, I think you might make a pretty good hand.
I'm sure gonna try, sir, and I appreciate you showing some faith in me today.
Just don't let me down.
Hudson nodded curtly, determination etched on his face. With Smoke in the lead, the group of riders reached the hills and penetrated deeper into the increasingly rugged terrain. Some of the Triangle B hands had been part of search parties that had explored this region, looking for the rustlers, but it wasn't long before they reached areas that were new to them. Smoke, however, knew exactly where he was going and led him straight to the narrow canyon that had served as the gang's hideout. As Smoke had expected, the place was deserted. The rustlers were gone, and so was the herd of stolen cattle. They would have waited until today to move the stolen stock in the hope that Cal could be found and eliminated before he revealed the secret hideout. But once it was clear he had gotten away, they had to cut and run. Coolidge's arrival would have guaranteed that.
They're gone. Now what do we do?
There's only one trail through the mountains. Since we didn't run into them on the way here, that's the only way they could have gone.
Then we can follow them.
That's exactly what we're going to do.
The canyon narrowed even more as they went. Enough that only three or four cows could have moved through it abreast. The herd would have been strung out for a long way in the twist and passage. The droppings the searchers found provided plenty of proof that the cattle had come this way. Although the steep walls on the sides remained the same height, the trail began to climb, and the sun dropped steadily toward the peaks in the west.
We've already made up quite a bit of ground. They can't do any better than move at a crawl. As soon as they go through the pass up there, the trail widens out enough that they can pick up some speed, especially since those cows will be going downhill. What we'll need to do is be on the other side, waiting for them.
How is that possible when they're between us and the pass?
I said this was the only trail they could use to take the cattle out of there. There's another path horsebackers can take. That is, if you're not prone to getting dizzy.
High and narrow, is it?
That's right. We're going to split up. A dozen in each group. One bunch will follow this trail to block any retreat by the gang. The other will take the shortcut and get ahead of the rustlers on the other side of the pass. We'll jump them as soon as the cattle are through. When the men bringing up the rear hear the shooting start, they can hit the gang from behind.
You're not going to give them a chance to surrender?
I suppose we ought to. But I reckon we can be pretty sure they won't take it.
I hope not. I want to get those skunks in my gun sights.
You know these men, Bart. You pick the groups.
Fine, but I'm going with the bunch that'll be waiting on the other side of the pass. I want first crack at those no-good rustlers.
That's where I intend to be, too.
Quickly, Hudson sorted the men into two groups. A few complained, but since it was likely that all of them would get in on the action before it was over, there wasn't much protesting. A short time later, they reached the spot where the smaller trail, the one that cattle couldn't use, branched off. Smoke, Hudson, and 10 more men followed that trail as it bent and climbed to dizzying heights. It was a nerve-wracking passage that had the men pale and clutching their saddles as empty air fell away for 100 feet or more, seemingly no more than a hand spanned away from where their horses set down their hooves.
You didn't say this way would give a damn mountain goat the phantods.
Cow ponies are sure-footed, and we'll be at the pass before you know it.
Can't be soon enough to suit me.
Eventually, the trail stopped hugging the edge of the harrowing drop-off and entered a narrow cleft. Still riding single file, the men followed it for what seemed like miles and finally emerged from it into the pass where the other trail crossed over the mountains. Shadows had begun to gather there. In the fading light, Smoke studied the ground.
No cattle have come through here. We're ahead of them.
Listen. I think I can hear them coming up. They're not far away.
Come on, we'll get in position.
The men hurried through the pass, which was about 20 yards wide and maybe 100 yards long. At the far end, it opened out onto a broad sloping bench covered with bands of pine trees. Smoke led the men into the closest bunch of trees, where they dismounted and tied their horses in the thick shadows under the branches. Then they pulled their Winchesters from saddle boots and ran to the edge of the trees, stopping where the cover ended.
They're in the pass. Wait until the cattle are through and start to spread out. The rustlers will be right behind them. When enough of them are in the open, we'll make our move. Follow my lead.
Do what Mr. Jensen says, boys, and be glad it's the Triangle B that gets to put an end to this bunch of killers and thieves. Thanks again for giving me this chance, Mr. Jensen. After that business with Cal, I don't reckon I deserve it.
Deserve it from here on out.
Yes, sir. I'll do my best.
A couple of minutes later, the first rank of cattle emerged from the pass, a dark mass in the twilight. More and more of them poured from the opening, spreading over the slope as Smoke had said they would. At last, riders followed them, also veering to the right and left as the rustlers positioned themselves to contain the herd and move it downhill. The time had come, Smoke knew. Motioning for Hudson and the other men to remain where they were, he stepped into the open at the edge of the trees, lifted his rifle to his shoulders, and bellowed at the top of his lungs.
Throw down your guns and lift your hands. You're finished!
Instantly, the rustlers reacted exactly as he anticipated they would. The crimson flowers of muzzle flashes bloomed in the dim light as gun thunder rolled over the mountainside. Flame lashed again and again from the muzzle of Smoke's Winchester as he fired, swiftly working the rifle as a loading lever between shots. Along the line of trees, more shots cracked wickedly. The volley of lead scythed through the rustlers, knocking several of them off their saddles. Others were unhorsed when their mounts went down. Those men came up shooting, but slugs from the Triangle B guns ripped through them and rapidly put them back down. The gunfire spooked the tired cattle, and they began charging back and forth, adding to the chaos. More shots rattled from the mouth of the pass as the other bunch of Triangle B punchers charged through and fell on the rustlers from behind. The muzzle flashes were like a swarm of 1,000 fireflies that had descended from the darkening sky. Smoke's Winchester ran dry. He tossed it aside and drew his Colt as one of the rustlers charged him. Smoke triggered left and right, and the attacker's horse went down violently, its front legs folding up and throwing the rider over its head. The man hit the ground hard, but rolled and lithely came back up on his feet. He had closed the distance between himself and Smoke until Smoke was able to recognize him.
Colin!
Damn you, Jensen!
The gun in the treacherous foreman's hand blazed as he triggered again and again. Both of Smoke's Colts boomed at the same time. Coolidge went backward, as if slapped down by a giant hand instead of the pair of 45 slugs crashing into his chest. His arms flung out to the sides. He landed on his back and kicked one leg while the other drew up in a death spasm.
Jensen. Ow.
He died without knowing the answer to his question. The gunfire had died down already to a few scattered shots, and then even those ended. Silence fell except for the racket generated by the cattle and the sound of more hoofbeats coming from the pass.
Hudson, how many did we lose?
2 men dead, as far as I know. Another couple wounded. But I reckon those rustlers are wiped out. Unless this is more of them coming now.
It wasn't.
Smoke! Over here, Pearly.
Pearly and more than a dozen men from the Sugarloaf galloped up and came to sliding stops that raised clouds of dust. Pearly looked around in disgust.
Daggummit, it's all over, ain't it, Smoke? You didn't get here in time.
Oh, I don't know about that. You got here in time to help round up all those cattle and hold them here until we can push them back over the mountains in the morning.
Great.
Two days later, Smoke and Sally were waiting on the platform at the train station in Big Rock when Thaddeus Bolton and Susanna emerged from the depot. Father and daughter were both soberly dressed, Susanna in a black traveling outfit with a veil over her face. Both of them were in mourning. Emmeline Bolton's coffin had already been loaded on the eastbound train that sat beside the platform, steam and smoke puffing from the locomotive. Bolton nodded as he and Susanna came up to Smoke and Sally, and Bolton shook hands with Smoke.
We wanted to say goodbye and tell you again how sorry we are things worked out this way.
Thank you. You're not going to try to talk me into coming back out here once Emmeline's been laid to rest in Tennessee, are you?
No. That's your decision to make. I'm glad you're going to keep the Triangle B, though. Maybe you'll come visit from time to time.
Perhaps. I do have one more favor to ask of you, Jensen. Keep an eye on the spread until I can locate and hire a suitable manager, will you? Bart Hudson seems to have the makings of a good man, and he's too young to leave in charge permanently.
That's probably true. I already told him he can call on me if he needs any advice, and the other ranchers in the valley feel the same way.
Sally and Susanna had been talking quietly while the men spoke. Sally hugged the girl and patted her shoulder. Both of them smiled. Then Bolton took his daughter's arm and they boarded the train. A few minutes later, the locomotive pulled out and a long line of cars followed. Smoke and Sally watched it go.
What were you and Susanna talking about there at the last?
Oh, she was just asking me to pass along a message to Cal. She wanted me to let him know that she'll be visiting the Triangle Bee from time to time, whether her father ever does or not.
He was recovering by leaps and bounds already. That news will have Cal back on his feet before you know it.
Smoke Jensen 53, Thunder of the Mountain Man, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2025, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corp., all rights reserved. Production copyright 2026, Graphic Audio LLC, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by James Lewis as Smoke Jensen, Drew Copas as Cal, Ellen Quay as Susanna, Elizabeth Jernigan as Sally, Danny Montooth as Thaddeus Bolton, Christopher McLinden as Coolidge, Melody Muse as Emmeline Bolton, and Bradley Foster Smith as Pearlie. With additional performances by Tim Carlin, Wayne Leggett, James Konacek, Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Christopher Williams, Andy Clements, Chris Davenport, Terrence Aselford, Eric Mesner, Steve Winall, Matthew Bassett, Rainer Gabriel, and Christopher Walker. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Steve Winall. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Connor McGinley. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you've enjoyed Smoke Jensen 53, Thunder of the Mountain Man, you may also enjoy Those Jensen Boys by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, or Corrigan Brothers by Cotton Smith. These titles and many more are now available at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for a preview of Corrigan Brothers by Cotton Smith.
Holt Corrigan is your brother, I take it?
Yeah. Haven't seen him for a long time.
Heard he was in a gunfight in Amarillo. Got himself killed.
Heard that too.
He would have been involved in every bank holdup in three states if you believed everything you hear.
Help the little lady up and apologize.
Or what?
Yes. It involves lead.
There'll be another time.
Anytime you want to die.
Two men are out there. Just rode up. One's an Oriental, the other's white. I think he's only got one arm.
Sounds like my brother, Blue Corrigan. Lost his left arm in the war.
You still preaching?
I help with services in town from time to time.
Touch my family, and you will die a horrible death.
And that's Silka with Blue. Silka's our partner. Nakashima Silka is his full name.
You must be calm. The trick is to unbalance the opponent.
There's another story about you. 2 years ago in Austin, the way I heard it, three fellas were leaving the bank after robbing it and ran into you. You took down the first gunman with only your hands while he was pointing a six gun at your belly. In a split second, you grabbed the gun, killed the second outlaw, wounded the third. Heard that story all over Texas. Thought it was crazy talk, until I saw you in action today. Now I've got a hunch it was true.
Are you Dean Corrigan?
I am. Want to make something of it?
Hell no!
I'm not interested in going against Dean Corrigan. You know that.
Well, neither am I, Aegon.
What are we gonna do?
We're going in.
This is a setup, Blue. You know that.
Of course it is. But I don't see any other way.
How about using our guns?
The Corrigan Brothers.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.